Hello, and welcome to the Let's Talk Attachments podcast. My name is Jessica Da Silva, and I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist and an attachment coach, helping adults end their unhealthy dating patterns and create stronger, secure relationships. Attachment theory gives us insight into how we currently experience love through understanding our earlier attachment dynamics. I created this podcast as a safe space to share stories and insights on different aspects of attachment so that you can better understand how this manifests in your own life. My only request is that you listen with an open heart and an open mind. So without further ado, let's get into it. Hello, today on the podcast we have Shannon Bryant, who is the founder and CEO of Top Self, a self-development company offering coaching, courses, and community to those with feelings of low self-worth, insecurity, and jealousy in their relationships. Using her instructional design certification and nearly a decade of experience in learning and development, Shannon has developed many sales, systems, and development skills courses and delivering more than 400 training classes. As a relationship confidence expert and the host of the Top Self podcast, Shannon has inspired thousands to break up with bogus beliefs, crack the control code, and overhaul their insecure habits. And today, I have her on the podcast to talk to you about all things jealousy, how to normalize this emotion rather than see it as a shameful experience. We talk about discovering the root cause to your jealousy, tools to better navigate it, and most importantly, how we can change our relationship to jealousy so that it no longer derails our lives. So let's get into it. So hello, Shannon, and welcome onto the Let's Talk Attachments podcast. Happy you're here.
Thank you so much, Jessica. Excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to meet you and just kind of pick your brain on this topic of jealousy, because I know that jealousy has been the forefront of many of my relationship issues and conflicts. And so many of, you know, the anxious attachers, fearful avoidant attachers that I work with also really struggle with jealousy and just how to better navigate that. So I'm curious, let's just start with, you know, tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you started doing this work, specifically with focusing on jealousy.
Yeah, because it's not a topic that people talk about a lot, actually. And so part of that is just the shame and the guilt and the embarrassment that comes along with the topic. No one really wants to admit, you know, I'm jealous and I'm doing these things. I'm going through your phone. I'm, you know, we're not putting it on our dating profiles, that's for sure.
So
it doesn't get talked about enough. And really, if you would have told me 8 years ago that I would be helping other people with their jealousy, I would have said, there's no way. I was suffering tremendously from jealousy. I had been in all of my relationships as an adult. And I really thought it was just who I am. I just thought it was part of my DNA and there was nothing I could do about it. And I was doing a talk for a women's ACA group, Adult Children of Alcoholics. And it's really how I came to start my own podcast about jealousy. I was talking about what it was like for me to grow up with a parent who was an alcoholic. So my father was an alcoholic. It was a very violent and chaotic environment growing up. And so I was just talking about what it was like to grow up with someone who was an alcoholic and how it affected me as an adult. And I brought up briefly how jealousy showed up in my relationships and how damaging it was for my relationships. And also the insecurity that you have that keeps you in relationships that you should not be in, that are not good for you. So ruining potentially good relationships, staying way too long in bad ones. And we do that. And so I was just talking about that. And at the end, all these hands went up like, oh, thank you so much. I felt like you were talking about me. I didn't know that other people thought the same thing and do the same bad, insecure habits that I'm doing. So I knew that that's what I needed to focus on and talk about. So here we are.
Wow. And yeah, you're right. There is a lot of shame around that because often when we feel jealousy, which is a very normal human emotion, a lot of the time we can take action on it in a very unproductive and unhealthy way. So I love that you kind of talk about, kind of changing your relationship to jealousy and seeing it as a solution and not necessarily a problem. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, and that's something that I think if you're suffering from this, to really distinguish that, because I hear people say all the time, I really struggle with jealousy. Jealousy is such a problem for me, or jealousy is such a big problem in my relationship. And one, when we make it that big, it sounds like all of us, that's all
Right.
that we have, that's all that we are, and that's all that we're offering to that relationship is this insecure, jealous person, which is not true. But the bigger piece of jealousy is not the problem. That's the symptom that's showing up. So that's the solution. It's a solution. And kind of that thing that, pokes you on the shoulder and goes, hey, Jessica, go look at this. Go look at this.
Yeah.
There's something there. And it's going to keep showing up for you until you do the work and you figure out, okay, why is this guiding my life so much?
Wow. Okay, I love it. So it's a symptom. So there's something deeper that we need to look at. So I'm curious, what are some root causes that you have discovered for yourself personally or just people that you work with? What is the root cause to the symptom?
So I'd say it really, people tend to fall in two different buckets. One, and probably the biggest bucket, is someone who has grown up with some dysfunction in their environment as a child. And I know you're very familiar with this, but if you didn't have a parent that was parenting, sometimes then as we get into our adult relationships, we're looking for that partner to fill that role. So we're looking to them for that constant reassurance. We're looking to them to make our self-worth or to make us feel like we're worthy. And so in my case, growing up with a father who was an alcoholic, my parents divorced when they were 12, and when I was 12, not them, when I was 12,
Yeah.
that would be a whole nother problem,
Oh
right?
yeah, whole other podcast episode.
That's right. So when I was 12, they got divorced. And at that time, my dad was still drinking. And I said, you know what? I don't want to have anything to do with you as long as you're drinking. And he took that to heart. I didn't speak to him again until I was 25, and that was just briefly. And then not again until just this last 3 years, which unfortunately was the last 3 years of his life. So when you grow up, and I created the story in my mind, even though I'm the one that said, I don't want to have anything to do with you while you're drinking, I assumed, as a child would, that he's going to pick me over that. And so when he didn't, the story that I said was, oh my gosh, well, if my own dad doesn't love me, why would anyone else? I must not be worthy of love. There's must be something wrong with me, or no one's going to love me. And if there's someone around, they're eventually going to leave. And so that really led to the jealousy. So I see a lot of that where people tend to fall into that bucket of some type of dysfunction. The other bucket I would say that people land in is they'll say, I had a great childhood, everything was fine. I just was in a relationship with infidelity. That partner cheated on me, or maybe a series of relationships with infidelity. So one, sometimes people will say, oh, I had a great childhood and nothing was wrong, when there may be some things there that are contributing, but they also may just have had those relationships. And of course, as humans, we want to protect ourselves from feeling that pain. So sometimes we will adopt very insecure, unhealthy habits to protect ourselves from that.
Yeah, that makes me think a little bit about my kind of my history with why I became, because I'm telling you, Shannon, I experienced a lot of jealousy in my relationships.
Oh,
It happened a lot. And
yeah.
for me personally, it's that first bucket where a lot of abandonment growing up, not getting the attention that I needed. Like I really need attention and I've really owned up to that. However, any kind of threat to that attention, it was just like, oh, this side of me.
Explosion.
Yes.
And I would imagine you felt like, who is this person that's doing these things and saying this and being so mean?
Yeah, there's a lot of shame with that because you do behave in ways and you say things and do things that are really hurtful to the person and to the relationship. So I understand. I do understand that
Yeah.
experience.
Yeah, it got so bad in my relationship with my husband. Thank goodness he stuck around. He was seeing how hard I was working at it. You know, should he have left? Maybe, because we got to a point where we couldn't go to dinner, we couldn't go see
Wow.
movies, we couldn't go to events because I would explode and we'd have this argument. And that's when you really know, like, especially when it starts to affect your partner to the point that they're changing how they behave. He would say, I feel like I can't even look around. Like I have to walk with my head down. So it can get pretty severe.
Yeah, I know. My partners would say, you know, I feel like I'm always walking on eggshells around you. I can't even be myself, which is not
Yeah.
good.
Right. And we know, and it's like, oh, us more than anyone. Yes, it's affecting our partners, but the people that I coach and the people that step up and are talking about their experiences with this too will say, I feel like I can't control myself. I feel like it's not me, and I don't know what to do.
Yeah, I made a post very recently where I acted out this whole scenario on my Instagram with my partner, where we're at like a restaurant. Okay, and normally that would be a triggering place, right? Because there's people
Yes.
around, there's possibly attractive women around you.
Right.
And I did three reactions, one with the anxious attachment, right? Like their reaction to seeing their partner, just glance, you know, glance at an
Yes.
attractive person, the fearful avoidant reaction, the dismissive and the secure. And for the secure, I wrote, you know, so I kind of showed like what the thought process is like. And I said, well, secure attachment would just think, you know what? It's okay for my partner to glance. It's a human experience to glance. And I choose to trust him instead. And oh my goodness, the backlash that I got from that. Because people think that it just showed me how many people are operating from this very wounded and jealous place.
Yes. Yes. Because people will say to me, I have to go check out that post. Thank you for telling me that you did it. I'm gonna go check it out. I love that. Thank you for doing that because yes, and I hate that you got the backlash, but you're right that people think that they have a very wrong perception of what that relationship is supposed to look like, and we very much want to control and think that there's something wrong with that. For one, a lot of times it may be a situation where I thought he glanced at someone, but he was just looking around, like it happened to be, because of course, what's in our mind, we will find, right? We will find proof, evidence, all of that to make us right. And so, of course, I'm going to see when he looks at the cute waitress, of course, I'm going to notice that when really he was looking for the restroom, you know, or looking at artwork.
But and even if he was glancing at her to just acknowledge, you know, wow, that's an attractive
Yes.
person, that still shouldn't be so activating and so stressful for us, you know?
Yes. And some of the feedback that I've received as well, similar to that, is, well, if I'm not checking, like, no, I'm going to keep checking because if somebody's doing something wrong to me, I want to know. Okay, sure. But do we want to spend every day of our lives, which is with a habit that we get into, trying to prepare us for something that may or may not happen? And if it does happen, you're no more prepared. The pain is no less. You're not going to react differently because you've been looking. All that does is keep you in that anxious state every day versus when it will happen. And so I think, we say, oh, I want to know and I want to check. But here's the thing that I think is really important and sort of a mindset shift to think about. If what you want from that partner is fidelity, if you want that they're not doing anything, then you'll be checking forever because you can't prove that fidelity. You're never going to see it. And that's what happens and why we get in that habit, because I'm going to go look at his phone, or I'm going to go look him up on location, or I'm going to check social media. And if I'm not finding anything, then we tell ourselves, oh, I used to say this all the time. He must be deleting it, or he must be really good at hiding it, or I'm not looking at the right time, or I'm not looking in the right places. Because guess what? There wasn't anything going on. And the bigger question is, we don't know if maybe our partner will cheat, maybe they won't. Maybe we'll be together for the rest of our lives, maybe we won't. Set it all aside, if they will cheat or not cheat, what's important to figure out is, why are you so obsessed? Why are you so anxious about it? Why are you letting it run your life? And that's what we try to figure out. How can we then handle this and understand that it's guiding our lives versus protecting us?
Wow, so many good points. So many good points. And you're so right, because it's like, well, if I just surrender to this, what if they take advantage of me? What if I'm stupid? What if I fail at this? What if,
Yes.
I'm missing
Yeah.
something? There's that panic there. But you're right. What's more important, like the anxiety and the preoccupation of focusing on that on a daily basis versus just trusting and just knowing that, hey, if I'm going to find out, I'm going to find out. I'm not, I'm a smart person here. Like I'm
Yeah.
fully aware, but I'm choosing not to just preoccupy myself with this because it's not helping me. It's not serving me or my life.
Yeah, you said one of the big ones that I hear all the time, what if I'm missing something?
Yeah.
You might be. Maybe you are. But here's the other piece of that. We're so focused on, is our partner lying to us, or what lies are they telling us, or what things are they not sharing with us? What are they not being truthful about, when we are the biggest culprits of our own lies, right? We're telling ourselves way more lies than our partner is telling us, and we're not looking at that and going, well, let's look at who's really being untruthful with whom here. Is
Wow.
that right?
Yeah.
Whom,
Yeah. And such
who?
a, I love that spin too, because it's all about taking personal responsibility as well
Yeah,
in this work.
absolutely.
So I'm curious, because one of the hardest things to do, Shannon, is to like, we experience that stress response and the impulse is to like say something or do something or react in a certain way. How does one practice kind of refraining from,
Yeah.
reacting?
Yeah, because it's tough. I mean,
Yeah.
in that moment, when you are fired up and you are 100% convinced that you saw what you saw, or they did what they did, or this makes perfect sense, it is almost just like it's coming out regardless. And that it is a hard thing. There's a piece, and I won't go into this part of it too much, but how your brain works and how the amygdala is looking out for you and going, hey, this looks really familiar. It's going to send that signal to your cortex to go, to your body, I'm sorry, to say, hey, there's something going on here. You need to maybe look at this. That's why it feels so strong to us. And it feels like, oh, that's real, because I can feel that this is real. I know what I saw. So for one, we have to think, wait a second, this is my very good lookout partner, my piece of my brain that just happened to catch something that might look similar to something that happened in the past. A lot of times, phone is a big trigger for people. If somebody, if they found that, somebody was talking with somebody through their phone, that can be a trigger. So one, just understanding sort of what is happening, and give yourself a moment to catch up, to say, wait a second, let me get out of this panic mode feeling so that my brain can think a little bit more clearly. The whole goal is to, there's two parts of it. So one is, I need to lengthen that space between the trigger and my response. So So I need to lengthen that. So what can I do in that time frame so that I respond differently than that automatic response? So there's a lot of stuff in there. Box breathing is one of my favorites because your breath is with you all the time. It goes everywhere you go. You don't need, I don't need a mat and some water, or I don't need anything else but me to do that. And that at least is going to get you kind of that, okay, I've got my breath back a little. I might not come all the way back to center. You probably won't. But I've calmed down a bit to think a little bit more clearly. When you're calmed down to think a little bit more clearly, I love this called the power of one, O-N-E, to then think, okay, let me be open to new, and then you fill in the blank with the E, explanation, examples, evidence, whatever that is. Like, let me just think through, because my first thought was probably wrong because I was in a panic. So let me think through this a little bit more. So anything you can do to lengthen that gap and then shorten the gap on the backside of, okay, maybe I did say some things, maybe I still let on or made a comment to my partner and now I've upset them. How can we shorten that recovery? Because that's the other part where that guilt and shame comes in. Once we've had our panic attack, and you may have experienced this, where, okay, I've unleashed on my partner. Now they're upset. We're in this argument. They're not speaking to me now, or they're upset with me now, which makes me feel even more insecure, right? And then we feel even worse, like, well, they're definitely going to leave me now. And then we sit in that for so long. So long answer, but we gotta lengthen the gap between that trigger and response and shorten the recovery time.
And that spiral is so real, right? It's like we're already stressed. We have this anxiety. We react on the anxiety. We make the situation worse, and then we're even more afraid of the outcome.
That's right. And we just stay in that. It's a hard pattern to get out of. But the biggest part is you do actually have choice in that. And it doesn't feel like you do. The more you practice on, oh, okay, I'm starting to feel this way, because we usually can start feeling a little bit before something happens. Like, we're probably already nervous that we're going to the restaurant because there's people.
Or the party or the concert or whatever.
So you already know. So there's actually a lot more time to help prepare yourself for that situation. Like, that's where the preparation should come in of, have I done everything to settle my nervous system? Have I practiced box breathing in case I need it in the moment? That's a big one too. I think we all, at some point, whether it was junior high or high school, I think I remember learning CPR. But if I haven't done it since then, and now all of a sudden in an emergency situation, I need to do it, I'm not going to know how. And I'm not going to do it well. I might recall some things, but I'm not going to do it well. And it's the same thing with this, with box breathing, meditation, journaling, any of those things that you're trying to lengthen that gap between the trigger and the response. We have to practice it outside of the emergency. And that's a big, component to this, or a big piece that is helpful, is practice it outside with other situations. Maybe it's your kid, that's frustrated or making you feel frustrated, whatever that is. We have to practice it outside.
And I totally agree with that. You have to practice it outside of it so that you know what to do when you are in that panic mode. And you're not just responding from those, unhealthy habits or just ways of reacting. I'm curious. I know you probably get this question a lot as well. And it probably ties in with this like self-regulation and working on that. But how does one know what is their intuition versus what is like actually happening in real life?
Yes, because we confuse them all the time. So, I actually had a great guest on my podcast named Ashley Greer. She talks about this. It's amazing topic, and I think it's very relevant to this jealousy piece, because we do that ago. because we feel all that so strong in our body, we think it must be
Yes.
true. Like, oh, this is my intuition telling me because here it is again. This is like the third time, or this is the 20th time. Here it is again. So here's how to tell the difference. Fear, because that's what this is, right? Jealousy, fear of abandonment, fear of, I'm fearful that I'm going to be left or cheated on or lied to. Fear is very heavy. It feels heavy. You can even feel it almost in the difference when you say fear and intuition. Intuition feels lighter, and that's how it feels in your body. The other part of it too is, if I'm already nervous about going to the concert, the event, or the restaurant, and then something happens at the concert, restaurant, event, that is most likely fear, not intuition, because you're already thinking about it. Intuition doesn't come when you're already so involved and engrossed in the thought process of, like, what are they doing? This is what I'm worried about. I'm already worried next week that we're going to go to this event, or that new coworker that started with him, I'm already worried about her. And then any little thing you think, oh, that's confirmation. That is fear. Intuition is lighter. It's going to come to you when you are not thinking about those things. It's going to be in the shower. It's going to be, randomly as you're drinking your coffee, like, oh, wait a second. I didn't think about this. So intuition is just, it's much lighter. It's not going to be something that you're already in fear of and already anxious about constantly.
Yeah, there is a different energy to the fear versus intuition. Intuition feels a lot lighter. Yeah, it feels a lot simpler as opposed to this like more abrupt and heavy, anticipation that comes with fear.
And I can understand why people get them confused or think, oh, I don't know which this is, because, again, it feels very strong in you, and so we get them confused.
I think any like visceral feeling within you, we have to be so cognizant of it. Like we can't just believe it for what it is or just think automatically, oh, that's my gut response is telling me the truth. This right. It's like, no. And I'm glad that there's more talk about this too, because it's not that every gut response you have is necessarily accurate. We have to really challenge it. We do.
Well, and especially when we're carrying around that trauma from our childhood, where we've adapted these habits or this thought process to help us survive in that time or help us get through it, we don't typically go back and inventory those thoughts and those beliefs. So if we're still operating from there, well, then yes, everything is going to look scary, or a lot of things are going to look scary, or things that look similar to what you experienced are always going to feel scary or familiar. So, oh, this is my intuition. I've been here before, but really it's fear.
Which is speaks to the importance of really doing this work, when you're not activated, just like how can you incorporate this self-regulation on a daily basis so that you can provide safety to your body? So then when you are triggered, you can kind of better assess, okay, is this real or imagined? Right?
Absolutely. I think people, we hear it all the time, nutrition and exercise and good sleep, and we go, yeah. Even for this, especially for this, it's so important and true. Just the different things that it does for your body. And the sleep part, I know when people are anxious and they're constantly worried and their mind is racing, it's really hard to sleep. Exercise will help you sleep. Good nutrition will help that sleep. So they all go hand in hand. And I know, that it gets overlooked a lot, but I want to just bring it up again because people may not connect it with what are things that I can do to help turn down the volume on my jealousy. Nutrition, exercise, sleep, those go along with that too.
Very much like a holistic approach.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I have another question for you.
Yeah.
With this attachment work, There's often this misconception that, okay, if I start dating someone or get into a relationship with someone who's more secure, I will no longer be triggered. I will no longer get jealous. And what are your thoughts on that?
So I experienced this actually. One, the poor, secure person, right, in the beginning. And that's true. And I feel like my husband was very much that way. Here's what we often, though, do when we get into those situations is like, oh, what's wrong? Or I'm going to create something to be wrong because things are so calm and good. I did that often in the early days of dating my husband because he's secure, because everything was like going great. I think that's also why my jealousy ramped up. Like, oh my gosh, I gotta create chaos and havoc and self-sabotage this relationship. The other part is I grew up with a very chaotic environment. So the calm, even though I hated being in that environment and people hate that, they're used to it. That's what feels normal to them and natural to them. So then when you don't have it, well, I'm going to create it because that's where I live. That's what I'm used to.
What
So
was your
that's
attachment
something.
style, Shannon? What was your attachment style?
Anxious,
Anxious,
anxious
okay.
attachment, yes. And you know, of course, a lot of times we get into relationships with people who are the avoidant, right? That's the best combo, best worst combo, but that happens, right? And I say worst combo in terms of that's going to ramp up your anxiety, right? Because I need reassurance, 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 and then that person is pulling away, which makes me even more anxious. But
Totally,
that's,
totally. And
yeah.
so speaking to that, and thank you so much for bringing that up because you're right. If your body is used to chaos, it's just naturally going to find that home wherever you
Yeah.
are.
Yep.
And that's great that you found a partner that was secure enough to just like reassure you and hold that space for you and be understanding and patient. And I think that's really what secure attachments can do for us in terms of like our own healing. Whereas someone who's more insecure, because I'm sure you experienced that too, did you find that dating people that were more insecure, did it like make the jealousy worse for you? Did it, what was that difference?
In some ways, yes and no. I will say that the jealousy really ramped up when I was with Secure because of the calm, because of like, well, there must be something. There's gotta be something wrong because when is the other shoe gonna fall? When is this all gonna go away? I don't deserve this kind of love. I don't deserve this wonderful relationship or this wonderful person. So something must be up. Like, when is this gonna be up? I will say too, though, you know, being with other types, maybe there were more instances where I could prove myself right it sometimes, you know, so which then just fueled that. So
Got
that's my
it.
experience anyway.
That's funny you say that. I experienced that too in my relationship as well, where it's like, okay, you seem like you're not lying. It's just hard.
Right.
It's hard to believe it. It really is.
It's so hard. Yeah, and you that makes me think of a great point that kind of going back to it is really hard for us to tell. You know, it can be really difficult for us to tell. Is this person telling the truth? Is this a good partner or is it not? And that's even more of a reason to go, you know what? It'll flesh out. If I work on me and I feel really solid with me and I trust my own judgment and I tr start trusting in myself, that will show up very loud and clear for me at some point. And I think that's why it's so hard when we say, oh, it's really hard to tell the difference because we aren't trusting our own judgment. So it makes it difficult. to figure out what that partner, if that's a good partner for us or not.
Yes, comes back to doing that work with yourself first and foremost. So I'm really curious, how did you like how long within your relationship with this secure partner of yours did you start to, better navigate the jealousy and kind of start feeling more secure within yourself and your relationship?
Yeah, I don't know if this is a good answer for the listeners or not, but it's the truth answer of the true answer. For me, it took about 6 years. The first 6 years of our relationship was rough for both of us. But also because there weren't a lot of people that were talking about it. There weren't a lot of people that were coming forward and saying, "Oh, I experienced this too. Here are things that I tried." It was kind of there wasn't a lot of resources out there for jealousy in particular. I certainly went to therapy, and for those that don't understand the jealousy and kind of it's hard to explain it, to have someone help you navigate through that's really never experienced it. It's difficult. So it took me quite a while, which is why too, I was like, I need to do this and figure out ways if I can shortcut that for someone who's really struggling, because I know how painful it is on a daily basis. If I can shortcut that even just a little bit for someone, I want to do that. And so hopefully I think the work that I'm doing is shortcutting that for a lot of people. So it took me a while, but hopefully not as long for others.
And I appreciate you saying that because I think it really does just take a lot of time for some people, and that's okay. So thank you for normalizing that, because I think often we think, quick fix. I need to feel better tomorrow. I need to feel better in a month from now. And it's like, not necessarily. Like, this is years and years of unraveling and undoing, right, that you're working
Yes.
on.
Well, and a lot of times with the jealousy, it also, there's some stoppers there. Like, oh, I was really jealous. We had this huge argument. And I see this a lot of times with clients of mine where, oh, they've had the argument and they're like, oh my gosh, I've got to fix this jealousy thing. Whatever I can do, I'm going to sign up for coaching. I'm going to sign up, I'm going to take a course. I'm going to go to therapy. I'm going to do these things. And then they reconcile with their partner, or they make up with their partner in a few days. And then it's because they're getting that reassurance, their partner's talking to them again, they're feeling all in that love space again, they stop and they stop the work. And then it's a while again before they feel like it's that bad to go, oh, I'm in desperate mode. So there are some things I think that also, slow down that progress for someone.
Definitely. It's easy to, go into that cycle of, okay, there's we're doing good, and then I get triggered, and then, we have this conflict, but then we find a resolution, and it's like this cycle, right? So it's
Yes.
really important, you're right, to acknowledge it and actually do something about it.
Yeah.
Not just wait until the next breakdown.
Right. Yeah, because then you get to the point where I think they might really leave this relationship, especially if they are with a secure attachment, right? Because they're like, this is not for me. This isn't healthy for me. So it could be.
Secure attachments, they might not stay forever, you guys. They might
They may
not.
not.
They're definitely very patient, though. It's incredible, and thank
Yes.
God for that. Thank God for that. I was gonna
Yes.
ask you too, what are some tips, just, and I know so much of what you've been speaking about is really helpful and kind of can guide people in terms of navigating the jealousy, but any like little tips that people can start kind of incorporating into their life now in order to, take care of this jealousy?
Yeah. One of the biggest things is self-awareness and really getting to how am I contributing to this? What am I really doing, and how often am I doing it? So think, do, say. I always tell people, get a notepad, think on one page, do on one page, write, say on the other, and start there. So the say part, I had some really good ones in in the height of my jealousy. So for example, because what we want to do is write down, what are the things that I'm saying to my partner? One, that's showing them I don't trust you. or that I'm fearful and that is hurting and damaging the relationship. So, one example of something that I would say often, let's, for example, if he was saying, trying to get me to remember something we did. So, like, oh, do you remember 2 years ago when we went here? And if I didn't remember right away, I'd go, oh, that must have been your girlfriend, or that must have been your other girlfriend. So we have those little jabs, those little gut punches that we're saying to our partner. And I just ask people, take inventory of that, write it down, and let's get a really good look at what you're saying. Because one, you're probably not even aware of the things that you're saying, certainly not aware of how often you're saying them. So every time you say one of those things, let's write it down. The do part is looking at their phone, if you're checking social media, location services. And then, of course, the think part is more like I was saying, what are some of those beliefs, that I have, maybe, like, what are some stories that I'm telling myself? What are things I'm saying to myself on a daily basis? Once we have that, I like to tell people to start with the do list. So that one, if you're looking at social media, you're checking location services, you're looking at their text messages, just pick one out of all of those that you've listed. Just pick one, and that's the one that you're going to stop doing. I started with location services. I was looking them up all the time on location. Is he where he said he's supposed to be? Is he somewhere else? So pick one, just one, and that's the one that you're no longer allowed to do. You can do all the 27 other things on your list if you want to. But just that one, we got to get some momentum. And I usually say, pick the one that you feel like is going to be the easiest for you to put down, to stop doing, so that we can get some small wins and some momentum. And then what people usually find is, oh, that feels pretty good to not have to do that 17 times a day and not to have the nervous stomach every time I get to, that I start to do it. And they see, that feels pretty good. Is there another one? And that's sort of the start of breaking those insecure habits.
Ooh, I like that. And I love that you start really small with the easiest thing that you can, put aside. Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's amazing. Thank you for that tip. That's really helpful.
Sure.
So, Shannon, how can people find you?
Yeah. They can visit the website at topself.com. They can join me on Instagram at Top Self Coach, or they can join on the podcast if they want to get some more tips and techniques and hear from experts. And the podcast is also called Top Self.
I love it. Well, thank you so much. For just your wisdom, these tips, and just bringing light to this topic that you're right, there is a lot of shame around, but it's also such a normal human experience. So thank you so much for normalizing it and sharing this knowledge with people. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening. If you are ready to begin shifting your own attachment patterns, you can learn more about my digital courses and my one-on-one attachment coaching package via the links in the show notes. And if you enjoyed this episode, please leave a positive rating. Your support means so much to me.